The housing market is looking shaky again.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, good morning. I'm Bill Radke. We got word this morning mortgage applications fell last week. Yesterday, we learned sales of existing homes were down last month. In a couple of hours, we expect the government to report a big drop in new home sales. Here to tell us what's going on, Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman joins us live. Good morning.
Good morning, Bill.
All this bad news. Hadn't the housing market recovered somewhat?
Well, you know, it had, but it was largely because of the homebuyer's tax credit. It was $8,000, and that expired at the end of April. Now we're kind of living through the morning after. New home sales were probably down 20, maybe as much as 25% in May, and home prices are also in retreat. A group called Macro Markets LLC reports a majority of the housing analysts that they survey every month expect prices will decline this year. And the Mortgage Bankers Association is actually a little more pessimistic.
So let me play devil's advocate here. Why should I be worried about dropping home prices if I'm not trying to sell my home?
Well, a lot of the rest of the economy is tied to housing. So building and employment in building and construction, appliance stores, lots of local businesses. And there are underlying problems that kind of matter to everyone, namely unemployment and foreclosures. And these are actually connected in the housing market. With all the job loss we've had and then this jobless recovery, people are just not feeling confident enough to buy a house or to trade up. And then unemployment is a major cause of people losing their homes. So foreclosures will probably be near a record high again this year. Banks don't like owning empty houses, so they sell them at whatever they can get, fire sale prices, and that undercuts everyone else who's trying to sell, and prices just keep coming down.
Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman. Thanks, Mitchell.
You're welcome.
4,000 nurse practitioners are in Phoenix today for their annual conference, and the mood there is good. After decades of fighting for recognition, the national focus on primary care and cutting costs could be just what the nurse practitioner ordered. From our health desk at WHYY in Philadelphia, Gregory Warner reports.
Nurse practitioners are nurses with a master's degree. They can diagnose disease, prescribe medication, and interpret lab tests, like a primary care doctor. But most states still require a medical doctor to sign off as collaborator.
We have nurse practitioners in rural areas that can't find a collaborator.
Jan Towers is director of health policy for the American Association of Nurse Practitioners. She's fighting state laws to make it easier for them to practice. On the federal level, healthcare reform law does recognize nurse practitioners and creates lots of new primary care positions for them to fill. Nurse practitioners charge less than doctors, and they can spend more time with patients. Patricia Stone is with Columbia University School of Nursing.
Talking to the patient, listening to their problems, that takes time. But when you can do that, you can encourage the person to make changes.
Changes, she says, that can keep people out of the hospital and off of medication. And that saves money. In Philadelphia, I'm Gregory Warner for Marketplace.
And let's take a look at the money in stocks. Share prices are following Wall Street's lead from yesterday somewhat. The Dow Industrials fell 148 points to 10,293. And right now, shares in Europe are down 0.5%, and Asian stocks were mostly lower today. And speaking of investments, the Louisiana judge who yesterday struck down the White House's moratorium on deepwater oil drilling in the Gulf of Mexico, well, his most recently available financial disclosure reveals extensive investments in the oil and gas industry.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Thomson Reuters, a source of intelligent information to businesses and professionals around the world. Thomson Reuters, knowledge to act. And by Vanguard, a client-owned company where the clients own the funds and the funds own the company. Learn more at Vanguard.com.
Shoppers love rewards programs. You can rack up miles or store credit just for spending money. Businesses also love rewards programs because they know most of your rewards will be wasted. When Los Angeles Times business columnist David Lazarus sees consumer waste, he springs to action. Good morning, David.
Good morning.
Which company's in your sights now?
I've been looking at CVS Caremark. They're one of the biggest pharmacy chains in the country, and they've got a pretty impressive rewards program. You carry a little card with you in your wallet or your purse. Every time you go to the cash register to purchase, they scan it, thus getting a whole lot of really valuable information about you and your purchase. And in return, they say you're going to get 2% back on your purchases. Well, what they do to give you back your so-called extra bucks is they tack them onto your receipt. And this receipt is about a yard long. It's as long as your arm. In other words, they expect you to schlep the receipt around until you're going to use these as a sort of coupon.
Companies often make their rewards programs or their rebates hard to take advantage of. Why do they bother having those programs?
This is what's known in the retail industry as breakage, and many businesses do it. For example, no airline expects you to cash in all your frequent flyer miles. No retailer expects you to send in all your rebate forms. If you did, these guys would go broke. Now, in CVS's case, it's a little bit more insidious because they are giving you the 2% discount, but then they're making you jump through all these hoops to redeem the reward. And I talked to some marketing experts who say, this is a particularly consumer-unfriendly way of doing it.
And you also talked to CVS about it.
I did. I talked to their chief marketing officer, and I said, hey, if you want the 64 million people who are a part of this program to actually enjoy their rewards, why are you making it so tough? And he said, you know what? You're right. And he says, what they're going to do in the future is stop putting it on the bottoms of those yard-long receipts and instead start putting the rewards into people's cards where they should be so that when you flash your card at the cash register, you'll get your discount immediately. That's a reward program.
But isn't that going to cost them a ton of money if the rewards program is actually rewarding?
You would think. They said they gave out about $2 billion in rewards last year, but only a small fraction of that amount was redeemed. So when I ask how can you possibly afford that, they say, oh, well, we'll make it up in volume. I'm not sure about that, but at least they're talking the talk.
LA Times business columnist David Lazarus, thank you.
Thank you.
And finally, since the 1800s, a cast iron sign marked the intersection of Wall Street and Broad near the New York Stock Exchange. Yesterday, the sign was sold at auction for $116,000, way above the expected price. Didn't we already overpay for Wall Street? This is the Marketplace Morning Report. In Los Angeles, I'm Bill Radke.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.